Okay. Welcome, everyone. I'm back. I'm Stefano Garzarella. I work in the Red Hat virtualization team. And in this talk, I would like to go through all the ways we have in Linux currently to emulate a VirtIO device. This talk was mainly inspired by Thomas, because last year I talked a bit about that in another talk here at FOSDEM about VHost User. And Thomas was happy about the comparison between all the way we have to emulate VirtIO devices. So I decided to go a bit deeper, and yeah, show all the pro and cons we have on all the way in Linux. So before going into the details, let's start about what is VirtIO. Maybe most of you already know everything about that, but essentially, it's an open specification. The current version is 1.3. There is the 1.4 out for public review. And what they wrote into the spec is the purpose of VirtIO is a straightforward, efficient, standard, and extensible mechanism for virtual device. So essentially, they provide, they define a specification for virtual IO. What the spec covers? So essentially, there is a first part is a core. They define the core component which each device used to do, for example, feature negotiation and that kind of things. Then there is into the spec a part to define the initialization phase for the setup. They define all the transport that VirtIO device supports. For now, we have PCI, MMIO, and channel IO. And then there is a big section for each device, so network, block, and so on. About the core components, we can say the three main components are the control path, the data path, and a way to exchange notification. The control path is mainly used for feature negotiation. So driver and devices essentially agree on which feature they need to use, because, for example, we can have a new device with a whole driver that is not able to use the new feature. So essentially, and also vice versa. So it can be a new driver and the whole device. So they do this kind of feature negotiation to agree on what to use. Then there is a configuration space, which is used to, for example, in a network card, is used to set up the MAC address. In a VSOC device, the device will tell to the guest, hey, this is your guest CID, and that kind of things. And then the configuration path is used to set up the data path. Most of the memory is always allocated by the driver, by the guest. So, like the data path, and so the guest need to tell the driver need to tell to the device, hey, here is the virt queue. And so, and the virt queue is essentially the main part of the data path. In the picture, I draw the split virt queue, and in the spec, there is also a new version which is called packed virt queue. About the split, essentially we have three memory areas. One is the descriptor table, which mainly contains a pointer to buffers with the length of the buffer, of course, flags, that kind of things. And then we have two rings. One is the available ring, and then the other one is the used ring. The available one is used by the driver to put essentially to expose to the device a new buffer, so for example a new packet. And the used one instead is used by the device to tell to the driver, hey, I used the buffer, now you can take it and clean it or reuse or whatever. And in the packed virt queue, everything is packed into the descriptor table, mainly for hardware, because we will see now we can or even hardware are able to expose VirtIO devices, and having three different regions can produce a lot of memory access, a lot of PCI transactions. So in order to reduce that contention, they define a new format for the virt queue, which everything is packed into the descriptor table. It's a bit more complicated, but can work much, much better with hardware. And about notification, we call kick the notification from the guest to the host, so from the driver to the device, and IRQ, of course, the other way around. devices. We have a lot of devices defined into the spec. It's an open spec, so if you have if you want to define a new device, you can easily send a series to define a new one. The main one we have a network card, VirtIONet, block device, VirtIO block, VSOC, a virtual socket. The first talk talked about a lot about VSOC. We have a VirtIO VSOC which support the AF VSOC address family. We have VirtIOFS for shared folders and others. And okay, let's go a bit into the topic of the talk. This is just an overview. Then we will go in each way. So the first way, the common way to do device emulation is to do it inside a VMM, so inside QEMU. This is kind of the standard way, and also one of the key points of VMM is exactly to do device emulation. And QEMU, in our case, provide a lot of VirtIO devices. Then we can, another way we have is to move the device emulation into an external user's process. The main purpose is for security and reliability, but as we talked about in Rust VMM, is also for flexibility. We can write in a different language and other reason. In Linux, for now, we have two ways. We have the VHost user way, which is the one I talked before in the Rust VMM talk, and VDAS, which is VDPA in user space. We will talk a bit more about that later. Then another way to do to emulate the VirtIO devices are into the host kernel. And this is mainly for performance, because we are inside the kernel. We save a lot of system calls. And currently, we have two ways. One is the VHost devices, and the other way is a VDPA software device. I mean, this is the VDPA one is a potential one. For now, we don't have any VDPA software device implemented into the kernel, but we did some proof of concept, so it's kind of doable. And the last one is to move the device completely into the hardware. And this was the main reason for VDPA, again, for performance, scalability, and that kind of things. So going back to the first way, the VirtIO device emulated by the VMM. As I said, it's a common scenario. We can say QEMU is the de facto reference implementation of VirtIO devices. You can find a lot of them, not all of them, but most of them implemented in QEMU. And why to do that? Mainly simplicity. As I mentioned, one of the key role of VMM is device emulation. So you have all the API to access the guest memory, to inject interrupt, and that kind of things. And also portability. If you write a device in QEMU, essentially you can run the device on all operating system that QEMU supports. Drawbacks, a reliability risk, so your device is in QEMU, a potential bug in your device can affect QEMU at all, and your VM can go down. Another is the performance overhead. So, for example, if you have a network card and a driver need to send a packet, so essentially the VirtIONet driver will copy a packet into the virt queue, then send a kick, so it's a VM exit. KVM will write into the IO event FD to wake up QEMU or the IO thread. And then there is the device running in QEMU, will access the virt queue, pick the packet, and maybe send it through a top device, so need to do a write. So again, system call, go back to the kernel, send the packet, then return from the system call when the packet is sent. QEMU, the device implementation will move the descriptor from, we will put the descriptor into the used ring and then need to inject an interrupt. So again, another system call to write into the RQFD to tell KVM, hey, inject an interrupt for this device. So there is a couple of system call for each packet that the device needs to do. So how to use a VirtIO device in QEMU. This is a simple example where essentially we have two block dev option, which are part of the QEMU block layer. And we are telling to the QEMU block layer, hey, open the Fedora kukov2 image and use a kukov2 protocol on top, and then we can link this QCOV to image to a device. In this case, is a VirtIO block PCI device, but we can use even NVMe emulation or VirtIO SCSI or any other kind of block device that QEMU emulates. So we just need to change the device here. VHost. Okay, this was initially introduced exactly to improve the performance of a VirtIO net device. As I mentioned, when you need to send a packet, you need to do several syscalls. So what they did essentially is to move the device emulation into the kernel. The control path is still intercepted by QEMU, and the kernel will expose a couple of IO CTLs that the QEMU small device can use to essentially offload to the kernel the device emulation. So mainly, where are the vert queues and how access them. And at this point, and the data path will completely be handled by the device into the kernel. Currently in Linux, we support three devices, VHostNAT, VHostSCSI, and VHostVSOC. Why? Mainly performance, as I mentioned. Having the device into the kernel, the device, for example, to talk with the top, don't need to do syscalls, so we will save those kind of syscalls or reduce latency and improve the throughput. But for other use case like VSOC, the other reason is being into the kernel, we are really it's more easy to interact with the kernel layers, like the socket layer. So in the case of VSOC, we will need to open a socket into the kernel, and having the endpoint of the connection into the kernel will make us pretty much easier to instantiate a new socket for AF VSOC. Drawbacks. Yeah, of course, we want to go fast, so we need to pay something. And there is a security and readability risk. Essentially, a bug into the device, if in QEMU can crash your VM, here can potentially crash your entire host. And security, again, there is an attack surface into the host kernel. So, yeah, we need to be careful. Upgradability, if you want to provide a new feature, you need to update your host kernel. Portability, this is Linux only. It's only implemented on Linux kernel. How to use it? It really depends on the devices. For VSOC, it's very, very easy. All the complexity is hidden by QEMU, so you just need to add a VHost VSOC device and specify your guest CID. Then QEMU will set up everything, will create the device for the guest, and then do the AOCTLs to offload the emulation to the kernel. VHost user, I already talked a bit about that in the previous talk in Rust VMM, but essentially the VHost user was inspired by VHost, but instead of having the device into the kernel, the device now is moved to another process, another user space process, so completely separated from the VMM and from the kernel into the host. The control path here is a Unix domain socket because we need to move some file descriptor around, mainly for the shared memory. So QEMU needs to allocate the guest memory in a way that memory can be addressed by a file descriptor and then pass the file descriptor to the device using the Unix domain socket. And the data path at that point will be handled completely by the device accessing the guest memory. So why to do that? Essentially to mitigate the security and the reliability risk of VHost, because now it runs completely in another user space process. So if that process can be put in a sandbox, for example, to avoid any escape, or can any crash can crash just that process, we can easily restart a new process again doing the emulation. Another advantage is upgradability. So if you want to update your device, you just need to run a new process and potentially just outplug to your VM. And flexibility. We talked about it in the Rust VMM talk. With the VHost user, we can essentially write the device in any other language. Like we did in Rust VMM, we wrote them in Rust and use it in QEMU pretty easily. Drawbacks, a bit more resources used, because of course we have other processes, so all devices will run in another process, so a bit more resource consumption. And more coordination. We need to start all the devices first, then start QEMU. So there is a bit more coordination, but this could be hidden by management layer like libvirt, which is used essentially for also for that. And portability, I talked about that last year, was of course written on Linux, but it's not really Linux specific. Is any POSIX system can run a VHost user, because the only thing we need is a Unix domain socket and a way to allocate shared memory addressed by a file descriptor. And in POSIX we have the SHM open syscall that can be used. How to run it? Okay, it's a bit more complicated. So in this case, I use it as an example, the QEMU storage daemon, which it's a standalone application that provides exactly the same block layer of QEMU, but then can expose the device, the block device, in several ways. And one way is a VHost user block. So these two lines are exactly the same I used in the first example. So I'm telling to the QEMU storage daemon block layer, which is the same of QEMU, hey, open the Fedora qcov2 image, use the qcov2 format on top, and then export this image as a VHost user block device on this Unix domain socket, on the TMP VHost socket. And then we can start QEMU, open the Unix domain socket, attaching it to the device, to the VHost user block PCI device. One thing we need to use is the memory backend, a memory backend which is shareable. So the memory backend essentially is the way how QEMU allocate the guest memory. So if you don't use it, if you don't specify the default is RAM, I think, memory backend RAM or something like that, but essentially QEMU will do just a malloc, and which is not okay for VHost user, so we need a shareable memory backend, and the memfd is a by default is shareable, because it's the memory is essentially addressed by a file descriptor, and we can share the file descriptor to the Unix domain socket. This is Linux only, so if you want something portable, you can use the memory backend SHM that we recently we introduced in QEMU 9.1 last year. Okay, last one, VDPA, which is VertIO Data Path Acceleration. In this, VDPA was mainly introduced for hardware, but we will see we can do also software accelerator with VDPA. In the case of VDPA, the data path must be VertIO compliant, so the device need to understand the vert queues and how to elaborate them. The vendor path, the control path could be vendor specific. So in the case of the hardware device, we need a little driver into the kernel for the control path. And why? Mainly, again, for performance. We are offloading the entire device to the, one example is a SmartNICs. So the SmartNICs now, some of them are able to expose VertIO devices. So we will save several cycles of the CPU to do the emulation, because the device will be directly exposed to the guest, and the vert queue shared directly from the guest to the hardware. Yeah.
Sorry, the SmartNIC, it's a specific hardware physical or?
Yeah, physical.
Some special driver or something?
They need to, I mean, some of them are implemented with ARM chip, and they need to be able to understand the vert queue. So the driver essentially will tell to the hardware, hey, here is a vert queue, please use it for your device to do the emulation.
Very common, or I have to buy something?
It's not very common. You need to buy. Yeah, I have the driver, the slide later, but yeah, it's not really common. Another advantage is, essentially we support both VM workloads, but even container, because VDPA, we have a concept of VDPA bus into the kernel, where we have the VHost VDPA bus. So if you attach a device to the VHost VDPA bus, the device will be exposed in similar way of the VHost, the second one we showed. So the QEMU needs to use IOCTLs to set up the data path, exactly in a very similar way. But we have also another bus, which is the VertIO VDPA bus. So if you attach your device to that bus, the driver will be loaded into the kernel, into the host. So the vert queue will be allocated by the host, so you can attach your device directly into your host and use for bare metal application or containers. Another advantage is the unified software stack for VDPA. So as I mentioned, it was introduced for hardware, but we can write even user space devices. It's called VDAS, which is similar to VHost User, but requires some coordination into some modules into the kernel. And we can also have devices into the kernel itself, like VHost. As I mentioned, for now we don't have any device like that, but we have VDAS. I have an example later about VDAS. The advantage of VDPA that all of them, all of these three ways to implement a VDPA device are exposed in exactly the same way to QEMU. So QEMU only need to support VHost VDPA. And then for QEMU point of view, it doesn't matter really how the device is implemented. Drawbacks, portability, this is Linux only. So you need things into the Linux kernel. It's not like VHost User, which is completely agnostic. So it's really Linux specific. And about maturity, it's still work in progress. So it's supported by few hardware, not a lot. We support few, for now I saw just NAT and block supported as a VirtIO devices. And of course, the cost. You need to pay, if you want the hardware, if you want the device into the hardware, you need to pay for the hardware, of course. And this is example. Again, using QEMU storage daemon again, because QEMU storage daemon can also expose a VDAS device. So the first two lines again are exactly the same, but we are telling to the QEMU storage daemon, hey, expose your device as a VDAS block and with a name. Then we can use the VDPA tool to instantiate really the device. And at that point, we will find a SysFS entry that will tell us, hey, this is a VHost VDPA 0. And so to QEMU, we can just use the VHost VDPA device PCI with the character device where QEMU can do the IOCTL to set up the vert queues. And yeah, that's it. Thank you. Any question? The question was about if we can use ABPF essentially to do the device emulation into the kernel. Can be an idea. I mean, currently we don't have any of kernel device, VDPA kernel device implemented, but this could be potential one way to do that. The question was why not just passing all the PCI device to the guest to do. I mean, you can do that. The main difference is in this case, in that case, your entire PCI device will be assigned to the guest. Here, so you need to support all the PCI stuff. Here, the device can be emulated, can be implemented in any way. The only thing you need to, of course, you need a, your device can implement several of this virtual function, and the advantage is the advantage here is that it exposes a VirtIO device. So in your application, you don't need to change anything into the guest because the guest is already able to have hopefully have a VirtIO NAT driver can just use it. So you don't need to your driver for your PCI device into the guest. Yeah, the question was several years ago already were VDPA out, so why it's not so popular now? I have no idea, honestly. But I mean, maybe because the hardware vendor want to lock in, maybe, I don't know. Or maybe there are some kind of bottleneck on using that, I don't know. I mean, I'm not working on VDPA NAT. But yeah, sorry, we don't have time anymore. But if you have any question, I will be out.
Thank you.
Thank you.